This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. So just like you, he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor, welcoming Professor H.J. Mackinder, International Relations, to comment on three points of view. We begin in Moscow. Tens of thousands of people, reads the report from CNN, waved the Russian flag at the National Stadium as they took part in celebrations commemorating the eighth year of Russia's annexation of Crimea, which is deemed illegal by the Ukrainian government and not recognized in the West. Professor, a very good evening to you. Moscow's point of view after three, now we begin the fourth week of war. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. I think your mention of this rally on the 18th, which I guess is yesterday, in Moscow, the Luzhniki Stadium. This is a major venue. Something very interesting happened, which should point to the issues that are on Mr. Putin's mind now. It was broadcast live on government television. And then about 10 or 15 minutes or something into the broadcast, it stopped. And there started being sort of filler, music, you know, pictures of landscapes. I'm not sure exactly what. And then after another period of perhaps 15 minutes, they came back on and Putin concluded. And the Russians said it was technical difficulties. And I've learned today that the actual reason that the broadcast was stopped was that shortly into Putin's speech, in front of perhaps 100,000 people, there were started to be shouts from all directions of no more war, end the war, down with Putin, Putin resign, this kind of thing. And of course, Putin will recall December 21st, 1989, when he was a 36-year-old lieutenant colonel in the KGB stationed in Dresden in former East Germany, because that was the day, December 21st, 89, when the Romanian dictator, Mr. Ceausescu, addressed a similar rally in Bucharest. But the outcome was somewhat different. There were shouts. Ceausescu flinched slightly, and at that moment, the entire audience rushed the stage, and Ceausescu and Elena Ceausescu fled, but they were captured.
I mentioned, Professor, that the scene is worth reviewing on YouTube. Everybody can enjoy it, because Mr. and Mrs. Ceausescu are so completely out of time that when the audience starts chanting against him, he throws out his hand and says, "Be quiet," to tens of thousands of people, "Be quiet." And then his wife comes forward and chastises the multitude. "Be quiet. Don't you have any respect?" They're on a balcony overlooking this vast square. It's as if we're watching something out of the 19th century. And they flee to the roof where they take off in a helicopter. And later that day, the helicopter deposits them into the hands of their executioners. Please continue, Professor.
No, I was just going to say that it is very dramatic. I have walked the sort of Via Dolorosa of Mr. Ceausescu, which is marked with little crosses. This is the point where the devil Ceausescu last had his feet on the ground before he got in the helicopter, this kind of thing. But they were executed by firing squad 4 days later. And I don't think that people in Washington immediately connect these events at Luzhniki Stadium and the shouts against Putin with the shouts against Ceausescu in 1989. But Putin will certainly connect them. He's the fellow dictator and he's the fellow secret policeman who was, he was approaching the age of 40 at the time. He had an important job. And he probably has this absolutely etched in his memory. Ceausescu was in charge of everything one minute. The next second, he and his wife were fleeing for their lives, which they didn't succeed in keeping. The whole population just rose up. So Putin understands, as we perhaps do not, that what happened at the stadium are these are rumblings of very deep dissatisfaction, and they suggest hostility, they suggest political volatility, and they suggest the possibility of a sudden and unexpected exit for Mr. Putin, which is not what he plans. Well, the question he then has to decide is, well, what am I going to do about this war? Am I going to settle, sign some kind of a treaty that gives the Ukrainians what they want, because that's the only kind that Ukrainians will sign right now? Am I going to simply withdraw the troops without saying really what's going on? Either of those things will undermine him. If you're a dictator, you have to be victorious. Any number of examples of kings and emperors and other dictators who you lose one battle and all of a sudden, as happened with Napoleon III, you're no longer the king. You're nothing. Napoleon had the good fortune to move to England and live a few more years. But the point is, dictators cannot afford to lose. They have to win. And that means that what Putin is probably considering is a huge, massive punch comeback. He's going to regroup, and he's going to escalate. And he's already in touch with other countries, particularly China, which is in a position to supply him with food, with tanks. Our intelligence indicates that they are quite enthusiastic about supporting him, although there's a great debate. Putin has a longer term view. One way we can know this is that just 2 days ago in Vladivostok, a whole six ships were loaded with tanks to go by sea, presumably to the Black Sea, if the Turks will let them through. And that voyage is 28 days. So that suggests he doesn't expect to be terminating in any way, but rather that after 28 days, he's going to throw those tanks and God knows what else in. He's going to punch hard. And the third thing that I think must be mentioned is that Putin has discovered that nuclear blackmail, that is the threat, I'll go nuclear, works very, very well on the United States. Our administration has pretty much said, if you say you're going to go nuclear, if we supply X, Y, or Z, or if we suspect that you might go nuclear, if we supply X, Y, or Z, then we won't supply it. So you have a veto. You have a nuclear veto over what the allies can do. Now, of course, it is conceivable that Putin might use nuclear weapons, but we all know that this would be suicidal. This really would be Gotterdammerung if we unleashed all the nuclear weapons. And as President Kennedy demonstrated, he knew in the Cuban Missile Crisis that he could not allow himself to be intimidated by the danger of nuclear war. And that's psychologically the case. And our administration is signaling the opposite.
Professor H.J. Machender, International Relations, commenting on Moscow's point of view, making a connection to the fall of a dictator in Eastern Europe during the end of the First Cold War. It's a very neat connection, and I again recommend you all punch in YouTube and watch the Ceausescu's fall. It is surprisingly ugly and at the same time in the imagination of dictators everywhere. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.